You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Facing elimination down 3-1. Black Mamba jerseys, a monster performance from LeBron James. 7 lead changes in the last few minutes, and a wide open shot from a historically great shooter in a Lakers uniform. And none of that mattered on Friday, because the Lakers didn't have the one thing that the Miami Heat had on their side, Jimmy effing Butler. And that's why the Miami Heat pulled off an incredible, amazing, and truly inspirational effort to win Game 5 of the NBA Finals. Final score, 111-108. I'm David Ramil, a credentialed reporter and the host of Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Please make sure to subscribe to the show wherever you listen to podcasts to get the latest episodes. Just 3 days after being criticized, unfairly I might add, for not being aggressive enough on the scoring end, Jimmy Butler put together a masterful performance in Game 5, notching yet another triple-double, 35 points, 12 rebounds, and 11 assists to go with an unbelievable 5 steals to lead the Heat to what was a thrilling win and keeping the series alive for another few days. On Game 4 on Tuesday, Jimmy had a very solid game, but was quiet down the stretch as the Lakers made the adjustment of putting Anthony Davis to guard Butler. It paid off, as Jimmy struggled to get his shot over Davis and often wound up passing to teammates that just couldn't find a way to connect on those shot opportunities. But on Friday, it didn't matter who was guarding him, as Butler and his teammates made the adjustment accordingly, setting high screens, multiple screens, or forcing switches to get Butler the space he needed. I rewatched all 19 of Jimmy's shot attempts in Game 4, and he truly did an incredible job of understanding exactly how much time he had to get that shot off before Davis or another Lakers teammate could recover. But there were other moments when he simply willed the shots in, connecting on a three-pointer or a baseline jumper, even with Davis guarding him one-on-one, or working the two-man game perfectly with either Tyler Hero or Kendrick Nunn or Bam Adebayo. Still, it wasn't all perfect, obviously, aside from his overall solid play in the postseason and his incredible individual performances. Butler continues to impress by running at full steam at every opportunity, whether it's driving to the basket or breaking up a pass or bodying up LeBron James or Davis or anyone in a Lakers jersey. There's an iconic image of him late in the game five, doubled up from exhaustion over along the sidelines, what would have been the scorer's table outside the Orlando bubble. And he was noticeably tired in the second half. He went 7 of 10 in the first two quarters and just 4 of 9 in the second half, at one point missing 5 straight shots. But he hit 2 big shots in the last 2 minutes of the game and added clutch free throws as well, finishing a perfect 12 of 12 on his attempts from the line. And he sealed the win by never giving up, by never refusing to accept that the game was lost or that the Lakers were the favorites or even that fate somehow was on Los Angeles' side. A career made out of work and determination, and proving that he belongs at this level was vindicated yet again. For as good as LeBron was, and he too was incredible, an all-time performance from him of 40 points, 13 rebounds, and 7 assists, Jimmy was once again the best player on the floor. Indomitable, more determined than ever to carry his team to a win and to keep Miami's hopes for a championship alive. I don't say that just to add to the incredible positivity following an exciting game either. With Goran Dragic still sidelined, although his return is more and more possible with every passing day, the Heat continued to perfectly execute the attitude and determination that got them to this point in the first place. I had questions about how Miami would respond following Game 4, mostly because they'd never been tested in this way. For all of their faults, according to national media members, or their imperfect roster, or for their lack of superstar players, the Heat were facing elimination for the first time in the playoffs after never really being challenged through the first 3 rounds. It's been fashionable from Lakers fans and ESPN to highlight how Los Angeles has lost just 1 game in each of their previous playoff series, but it's been largely overlooked that they entered the finals with the exact same postseason record as Miami. And while Game 1, reeling from the loss of Goran and the foul trouble and subsequent injury to Bam Adebayo, it did result in a blowout, but Miami has since challenged the Lakers and more than held their own over the last 4 games. They responded in Game 5 the way they have all year, by taking your best punch and punching back just a little bit harder, by refusing to quit, by matching you step for step until they had gotten just past you enough to pull out a win. While fans in Los Angeles were warned about celebrating too hard on Friday night, and while news trucks waited outside the Staples Center to capture the excitement of yet another Lakers championship, the Heat took LeBron's best performance of the playoffs and surpassed it with one of their own. Whatever the record says, whatever ESPN and anyone else has to say, this is still a series. To quote Eric Spoelstra, we don't give a shit what everyone else thinks. And he's right, because the Heat are very much in this and look to even things up in Game 6 on Sunday night. As good as Jimmy was, he wasn't alone in contributing to Friday night's huge win. I'll talk about who stepped up alongside Butler before answering your questions on tonight's thrilling game. You're listening to Locked On Heat. Subscribe to the show on your favorite app to listen to podcasts and always get the latest episode by asking your smart device to play Locked On Heat when you get in your car to get your team every day. It was a little different from Eric Spoelstra today after having gone to Kelly Olynyk or Kendrick Nunn or some other players, even Solomon Hill, at various points throughout the playoffs and in the finals. He shortened his rotation, surprisingly, on Friday. Again, going to just seven players, a starting five of Adebayo, Butler, Crowder, Robinson, and Hero, and then going with just Iguodala and Nunn off the bench. So that was a little strange. No minutes for Olynyk, no minutes for Solomon Hill, and certainly not for Myers Leonard, although he had been starting a couple games in Bam Adebayo's absence. And while Dwight Howard returned to the starting lineup, or at least was back in the starting lineup after having been benched in the third quarter against the Miami Heat in Game 4, in Game 5, Spoelstra tightened up that rotation. I'm not sure if that was the right move, although they came away with a win. As I pointed out before, everybody on that team looked absolutely gassed towards the end of the game. They were constantly trying to match the Lakers' long-range shooting or intensity, where they would get a big bucket or they would steal momentum. They actually wound up taking the lead late in the game, and it looked like things were going to go very, very south for Miami. But again, as I mentioned in the first segment, they responded as well as you could have hoped for them. They've done the same thing all year long, and they keep finding a way to win. So maybe it works. I'm not sure. I think there were moments there where you certainly could have gone to Kelly Olynyk a little bit sooner, because I think he could have provided a little spacing from the center position. Those small center lineups where you have Iguodala on the floor with no Adebayo and nobody else at the five, really, other than Iggy, and this constant rotation amongst defenders, I'm not sure it works. You've got Anthony Davis, who's 7'11" out there, constantly getting to the rim or doing whatever he wants to, being able to get his shot over any defender because he's so tall and he has such a high release point. But at the same time, Eric just keeps going to Iguodala, hoping that maybe they can body up, challenge Anthony Davis a little bit. It didn't always work. Look, Davis finished with 28 points. He was pretty effective overall, 9 of 15 and 2 of 5 from three-point range. There were moments there where he just felt confident pulling up from anywhere, and he was knocking down those shots, 8 of 8 at the line too. So if he's not letting go with that mid-range shot or long-distance shot that has been so effective throughout the postseason, he's still able to draw contact and get some questionable calls in his favor. 8 free throw attempts, second to just Jimmy's 12 free throw attempts. So, that was something to see as far as Eric Spoelstra's decision. Following the game, he mentioned that he would probably continue going to a short rotation. He didn't really quite answer whether or not it was just a response to the momentum of the game or whether or not there was something behind the scenes. He just feels comfortable going with those seven guys. It's taxing. This is more a reversion to the former ways that Spoelstra had coached prior to the Orlando bubble. I talked all postseason long about how this is a very different version of Spo for benching Kendrick Nunn, for benching Myers Leonard, for going with guys a little bit different at different opportunities. Even going with Solomon Hill, that's quite an adjustment for him. But it seems like, well, Spoelstra's just comfortable doing what he does, which is playing guys an exceeding a long amount of time and just going with those players that he feels most comfortable. Late in the game, and a key defensive stop, he had Duncan Robinson out there, not known for his great defense, although he did acquit himself and had a pretty solid possession and solid game overall, to be honest with you. He even drew a charge on LeBron James. While LeBron complained, because he's LeBron James, it was absolutely a great call. He stood in his way, he took the charge, and it was a key turnover late in the game that Miami absolutely needed in order to stymie the Lakers' momentum going at that point. So I don't know if you could have brought in Solomon Hill or Derrick Jones Jr., who didn't get any playing time at all. It's something to think about, but if Spoelstra didn't do it in Game 5 in a must-win situation, I just don't see how he'll do it. Every game from here on out is a must-win game, so we can get rid of that, even though it's something for me to fall back comfortably on and say, you know, this is a must-win, but they're all must-win now. If you want to maintain your season, much less even try to actually pull down the championship, you have to be able to continue to give your best effort at 100%. And I think Miami has certainly shown that they're capable of doing that, even without Goran Dragic in the lineup. But Duncan, I do want to talk a little bit about him, because he had a phenomenal game. I think he spoke after the game and talked about being in the zone. 7 of 13 from three-point range. One of just a few players in NBA history to make seven or more three-pointers in an NBA Finals game. Finished with 26 points. 3 of 3 from the line. 8 of 15 overall, so he did have a mid-range shot in there. Oh, I'm sorry. He was actually a putback dunk on a three-point attempt from Jay Crowder, a transition three that Crowder took, wound up rimming out, and Duncan didn't give up on the play. He was trailing it the whole time. He rose up, timed it perfectly, caught the rebound in midair, and flushed it through. Every one of his 6'8" inches it used perfectly to finish that dunk. Not known for his springy athleticism, and yet it was a perfect encapsulation of his night where he just had everything going so well. But I want to say also, moreover, it wasn't just the fact that he was knocking down shots. It's how he was taking them. He was aggressive. He was looking for his shot. He didn't wait. He didn't wait for a perfect opportunity. Look, he gave up a couple shots. One time, I think he wound up getting a little bit too handsy with the ball, and he wound up bobbling a little bit on one of those dribble handoffs that they were trying to execute, and he wound up forcing a turnover there because he didn't feel comfortable taking the shot. But more often than not, Duncan was. He was coming off those screens, and even if he just had a little bit of space, regardless of whether it was Kentavious Caldwell-Pope or Danny Green or Rajon Rondo or Kyle Kuzma, whoever was chasing after him, because, well, Duncan Robinson's continuing to run you off the floor and run in circles all around the floor, and until he gets that shot and the look that he wants, if he just had the slightest bit of space, he was going to let that shot fly, and it was a thing of beauty, and it was coming down to this game where it was a must-win situation for the Heat. And yet there he was, as aggressive as ever. What an amazing journey. Of all the things that we're talking about, Jimmy Butler is going to get so much attention. But the fact that a second-year player in the NBA who has no right being here at this level and has been such a crucial part of Miami's offense all season long practically saved the season. Because Bam Adebayo struggled from the field, continuing to show some signs of injury, although he downplayed in his postgame presser. The reality is he looked shaky out there. You got an inconsistent night from Tyler Hero. You didn't get much scoring from anybody else, although Kendrick Nunn, who I'll talk about a little bit later in this segment, wound up having a phenomenal game of his own. But Duncan was absolutely the best source of offense other than Jimmy Butler. I think after the game, one of the comments from, I want to say Kevin McHale, was that, you know, the Heat look like they're struggling because they don't have anybody you can just give the ball to. And while a lot of that might be overblown, especially because you don't have Goran there to be able to get those points whenever they're necessary, Duncan was aggressive. Jimmy can absolutely do that, and he did it tonight. He did it in Game 3 as well. Maybe he didn't do it enough to everybody's liking in Game 4, but that's a discussion for another time. I've had it over the last couple episodes, so make sure you go back and check those out where we kind of break that down a little bit. But in reality, I think Jimmy played a pretty solid game in Game 4. I don't want to talk about that anymore because who cares? In comparison to what he did tonight and in Game 3, he's absolutely shown that he's one of the best players out on the floor. As good as LeBron, as good as Anthony Davis, Jimmy is saving this season for Miami, and he's doing such a phenomenal job of it. But Duncan was that second player, a guy who could get that point where you needed it. When Duncan was off the floor, the offense looked stagnant. It was either Jimmy or nobody. And unfortunately, when he was going through that stretch late in the game, when he was exhausted and doubled over and he missed those five straight shots, it was nobody. And so while Miami had built a 9-point lead and looked like they were outdistancing the Lakers, Duncan went to the bench, that lead crumbled. It was he had a phenomenal game, a plus seven, the highest on the team, because with him out there, obviously the offense just looked much more fluid. It was incredible to see this version of Robinson after what he's gone through, where he struggled with his shot, where he wasn't looking aggressive, where he was passing up the shot too often. It looks like he finally figured out that he is every one of those 6'8" and he can get that shot off over any defender. Look, I mean, he's going to get his shot blocked on occasion, or he's not going to feel comfortable with his timing, but he's so good at coming off those screens and just needing a split second to be able to unleash that beautiful high arcing shot of his. And it was falling tonight. And hopefully that confidence carries over into Game 6, because he looks so good, so effective in Game 5, that this is a version of Duncan that could absolutely be a game changer and a potential future all-star if he continues to shoot and diversify his game a little bit by throwing in some of those much-needed passes. He had 2 assists, also pulled down 5 rebounds. That's a pretty solid game for a guy who's just known for his shooting out there. So nice to see from Duncan that he had a very impactful game. But another guy who did was Kendrick Nunn. He played 28 minutes, finished 6 of 11 from the floor, 2 of 4 from three-point range, and finished with 14 points, along with 4 rebounds and 3 assists. That's a hell of a stat line for Kendrick Nunn, something we have not seen. Look, he was beaten badly after game five because he finished 2 of 11 and was one of those players that just couldn't capitalize on those opportunities that Jimmy was providing when he was passing up his own shot and looking to get other guys going. Kendrick wasn't able to get the job done in game four, but in game five, he was incredible. He looked like he had it going early on. He took a three-pointer. I think that was his first attempt of the game. And from there, you kind of start to see that comfort level, that swag, maybe a little bit of that rhythm going. And he just really seemed like he was out to get his shot. Look, this is Kendrick Nunn's game. He went 2 of 11 before. He just hit 4 more shots today than he did in the previous game. But either way, they were still a little bit more energized. He also made some smart places. There was one time when he drove the baseline. He drove to the hoop, was in the painted area. It looked like he was going to get his shot blocked. Laid a perfect dime on a cutting Bam Adebayo, I think, who wound up finishing at the rim or drawing a foul. I can't recall the exact play now, but it was just those kind of key plays there where he was looking to pass the ball or looking to work that two-man game with Jimmy. It was a really nice, cohesive impact there. It was nice to see Kendrick out there and having a very positive game because he has struggled for so much of the playoffs. This is all we need. Without Goran Dragic out there, you need another ball handler and facilitator. And while Kendrick is certainly far from perfect, to be able to get him and be effective and efficient the way he was in game five, a thing of beauty. Bam Adebayo, as I mentioned before, pretty obviously struggling. Just there were moments there where he was passing up shots at the rim. It feels like either he is hyper aware of the injury or he is hyper aware of the length of Dwight Howard or Anthony Davis or LeBron James, guys that can block his shots. There were a moment there where he was wide open at the rim and Jimmy fed him the ball perfectly and he kind of double clutched before rising up for a dunk. It's so unusual to see Bam hesitant because that's not who he is. He's always so explosive and he's not the version he is. Now, that's not to say he did not have a positive impact. He absolutely did. And on the defensive end, he is guarding Anthony Davis on a number of occasions. He's switching. He's doing everything. He's guarding LeBron. He's having a great overall game, just not the kind of aggressive version of Bam that we've gotten somewhat accustomed to seeing. I know that those games are still few and far between, that they're not the norm. The reality is that we've seen more and more of them in the Orlando bubble, and we need to see more of those for Miami to have an even better chance of winning game six and perhaps even winning game seven and clinching their fourth NBA title, because he is so good at getting to the rim and creating opportunities there for others, and he's just been stymied somewhat. So interestingly enough, not playing his best game, and still Miami wound up coming away with a victory. Now, Tyler Hero, Jay Crowder, both of whom were in the starting lineup, were a little ineffective as well. Crowder finished 4 of 13, 2 of 9 from three-point range. Tyler Hero, 4 of 11, so both of them also struggling with their shot. And it looks like the Lakers have done a very good job of understanding that those role players can't get it going. They constantly make it difficult for Tyler to create any kind of space. And Tyler, he missed a couple bunnies, if I recall correctly. There were some layups there, which he should have been able to capitalize on and did not. But I think between him and Jay, I think it's just they're able to focus on what they're doing and getting those open looks and finding a way to, I guess, just shut those down. I'll have to rewatch all of Crowder's attempts because I could have sworn a lot of those were open. But looking back now and thinking about it, he did struggle. He's continued to struggle. This is the Crowder regression that we all expected. It's unfortunate. He did wind up having a big shot late in the game. So nice to see that he's able to contribute. He only finished with 2 3-pointers, but those 6 points were crucial. They were a huge difference maker in the game. So it's you still have to have him out there. Nobody else is an option at this point. You can't play Derrick Jones Jr. Iguodala looks like he's continuing to age and struggle and not having much of an impact. He had 0 points tonight and played 20 minutes, finished with 6 rebounds. So at least that timely spacing is there. He understands where to get to corral the rebound. He's also able to finish with 2 assists and a steal and a block. So okay game from him, but not not enough of an impact. So, but you don't have any other options. I don't know at this point where Solomon Hill is better, and he's not going to earn the trust that Andre Iguodala has because of his experience. So I don't think Spoelstra is going to go to Solomon or Derrick Jones Jr. anytime soon. The Lakers role players, I'll add, also did not step up. They also finished with just 14 points off the bench, matching Kendrick Nunn's total. So I think Miami found a way to let the stars get their points, a combined 68 points for Davis and James. And then, of course, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope continues to be a frustrating. I'll say that. I wanted to say another F word that ends in ing. I did not. I go with frustrating instead. But Caldwell Pope, 6 of 15 from the floor, 3 of 8 from 3-point range, and 16 points as a starter for the Lakers. And he has just had a phenomenal series. He is as energized and much of a factor as anybody, to be honest with you. Okay, he's not putting up the same gaudy production as Davis or James, but he's having an impact. It's incredible to see Caldwell Pope, who was basically kicked out of Detroit for doing nothing and signed a big contract with the Lakers in order to get the whole clutch sports machine rolling in there and to get LeBron James there a couple seasons later. Whatever, that's a whole other story, but he's been effective in the finals and he's stepping up. He's hounding Duncan, he's hounding Tyler, he's doing a great job defensively. He's been very dangerous. So he was the one role player to step up, but guys like Markieff Morris, who have been so deadly from 3-point range, played 23 minutes scoreless. Kuzma only finished 3 of 10 and 0 of 4 from 3-point range, something that he's been able to knock down those shots pretty regularly during the series. Rondo was 0 of 3. Caruso-ing it all over the place, finished 1 of 3 from the game and only had 3 points. So not a great game for the Los Angeles bench, and that's good because it was the difference in Miami's ability to pull out a victory. But I'll get into some of your listener questions in the next segment. Remember, you're listening to Locked On Heat. Reminder that you can always reach me via email at lockedonheat@gmail.com or via Twitter using the hashtag AskLOHeat. So many of you did so in order to submit your questions for tonight's game. This one comes in from Steven, who sends this question asking, what are your thoughts on an inefficient Nunn performance? Can he duplicate this performance? That is an impossibly tough question to answer because we're not quite sure. I think he understood, like, part of what drives Kendrick, that whole Chicago attitude that Spoelstra likes talking about so often, is the ability and the willingness to want to prove people. It's, you need to be able to manufacture points to motivate you throughout the course of a season, especially as you're struggling, especially with the difficulties of the bubble and everything that it consumes and how it takes over every aspect of your being. It's players have been there for 3 months. It's got to be exhausting, draining. And so you have to find a way to stay motivated. And for Kendrick, following a really bad game that could have potentially cost Miami the season, he bounced back. I don't know if he'll continue to make this impact. Honestly, if I had to guess, I'd say yes. I think you're not going to guard him closely, even though he had a big game. And even when you do, the reality is Kendrick is skilled enough with the ball to be able to create his own shot. He has that pull-up jumper that he was knocking down today. If he's getting that 3-point shot because he's a little open from the behind the rim perimeter, he's going to take it. And if he's knocking it down, well, then, yeah, he's going to be able to be impactful and effective. So my feeling is that, yes, he will be able to duplicate this performance. At least that's the hope. But I also strongly just think that he saw something, and maybe this is enough of a confidence boost to keep him going through the next couple games. Jeff asks, through 5 games, where does Jimmy rank in terms of great finals performances in the post-Jordan era? Oh, this is a question that probably needs a lot more time. And over the next 2 days until Sunday's game 6, you're probably going to see a lot more talking about Jimmy's performance. But look, one of just a handful of players to finish with multiple triple-doubles in the NBA Finals, this is the highest stage. And as great as his Game 3 performance was, this was a season saver. Another triple-double, outplaying two historically great players in Davis and LeBron James, MVP-type candidates. And I think the fact that Jimmy continues to find ways to step up, you can't say enough about it, because really it was exhausting and exhilarating, and my heart could not take the second half of that game where it was just punching and then seeing the Lakers find a way to punch back. It was exhausting and yet thrilling at the same time, mostly because Jimmy just kept finding a way to make the right play, to make the special play, to shift momentum back in Miami's favor for a few seconds or just enough to seal a victory. So where does it rank? I mean, I don't know. Off the top of my head, Shaq had some pretty good games. Dwayne, certainly, in 2006. Steph Curry has had big games. Kevin Durant. I mean, all these things, even LeBron James has had multiple games. So it's hard to place it. But overall, I'd say that this is right up there, second to Dwayne, as far as Miami Heat finals history. And that's with LeBron playing as great as he did throughout many of those, you know, four appearances during the Big Three era. LeBron had some pretty good games in the NBA Finals. Well, maybe not in 2011, but I don't want to rehash that right now. As far as, you know, Dwayne, Chris, everybody stepped up here. You know, Shaq had some big moments in Los Angeles. Kobe obviously had to have had some big games too. Off the top of my head, I can't think of anybody else. Tim Duncan probably had some big moments. He, even if it wasn't just, you know, not 45-point scoring binges and still wound up, you know, pulling down rebounds or getting key blocks or defensive stops and things of that sort, because that's just who he is. Kawhi last year, I'm trying to think if he had any kind of similar stat line. I'm sure it was probably pretty close, but overall, you have to include Jimmy. I think you keep seeing a lot of the attention going on Jimmy because of his performance in Game 3 and Game 5, and it's well deserved. Like, this is absolutely a vindication of everything that's gotten him to this point. He is so good, so effective. I don't know if he's a top 10 player in the NBA or not. I don't know if he's a top 15 player. I don't know where he ranks. That's questionable. I mean, a lot of people have Westbrook on your top 10 based on his performance in the past. I don't know. I don't care. Jimmy is here, and he is perfect. The way that Eric Spoelstra was talking about him in postgame, that is as close a relationship have you seen. Spoelstra has only talked that way about two players in his history, Dwayne Wade and Udonis Haslam. And now Jimmy's up there. Like, there is almost like a gleam in his eye and a tear waiting to form at the corner of his eye as he talks about those incredible performances from Jimmy. And he's going to continue to push him and get the most out of him. And Jimmy just loves that. He finds a way to respond. I'll add this. If you didn't notice it on Twitter, I retweeted it. But Locked On Nuggets host Adam Maris tweeted a video, I guess, of Jamal Murray talking post-game, just talking about Jimmy Butler being so inspirational that I'd like to be a part of that, quote unquote, where he says, I'd love to be a part of something like that where he's challenging me and getting the best out of me. Like, the narrative about Jimmy from where it was 2 years ago, when he was a malcontent, forcing his way out of Minnesota and getting to Philadelphia and pissing off and burning those bridges everywhere he goes, to where he is now, where he's such a hardworking badass that carries a team in the biggest effing stage possible, in a difficult situation in this Orlando bubble, going through all the turmoil and everything else. Here he is, outperforming superstars and proving that he is himself very much a superstar. Incredible. Jeff asks, can we confirm if Derrick Jones Jr. is 100%? I was shocked to see Duncan in for obvious defensive-only possessions. Yes, Derrick is available. He's not in the inactive list. He's just not part of the rotation. I don't think Spoelstra feels comfortable going to him. From what we've seen of Derrick, he's going to be foul-prone. He's going to get in there and put somebody on the line. He's going to make a mistake. He doesn't move well, or he's going to just get called because he's not a star. I don't know. He could get a little bit into his own head or maybe make a mistake in a key situation there. I think you're going to need these guys to step up at some point. I don't think you could continue to milk this seven-man rotation. I think it's just too hard. Like, at some point, you're going to come up short because it's so exhausting. And that's – you don't want to lose a game for being too stubborn and not going to players that might be able to provide a boost at some point. So I'm not sure. This last question comes from Jack. He asked, does Jimmy Butler belong in the top five conversation? Sure, why not? I don't know if I believe it, but tonight I certainly feel it. It was an incredible performance. So hard to say. I mean, if this season has shown anything, between the long hiatus, between the Orlando bubble, the recency bias, the narratives and everything that comes with it, the fact that likely title contenders in the Clippers and Bucks fell short, and even the Rockets, where there's two superstars and former MVPs, fell short. Like, it's so hard to quantify any of this. I mean, Jimmy didn't have the kind of stats that a Kawhi Leonard or a Giannis or an Anthony Davis had. But how much of that is a good team? How much of that is coaching? How much of that is other stars kind of carrying the second and third load there for a player? It's very, very difficult to separate anything from all the noise that comes into judging them. But I'll say that Jimmy is probably not a top five player. But to me, he's every bit a superstar in that he changes the course of a game. I've talked about this before, and I know I got some crap from Lakers fans for saying that. To me, Anthony Davis, as great a player as he is, I don't think he's a momentum-shifting superstar, because it almost seems like he just gets the points that he does and makes the impact that he does. Well, for one, incredible physical tools. You can't take that away from him. At the same time, he's also kind of at the whim of LeBron. When you look at LeBron carrying this team in game five, a pretty phenomenal performance. And Davis, pretty solid showing too. But, you know, again, a lot of that has to do with his ability to be, he could be even better is what I'm saying. And the fact that he's not, I don't know. I will also mention, I did not mention this earlier, Davis suffered what looked like a lower left leg injury or lower ankle, impossible to tell. A Lakers reporter idiotically tweeted out that it looked like he had been kicked in the shin. That was not the case at all. He kind of just moved his foot around and bumped or grazed Duncan Robinson's leg, and somehow that was enough to kind of tweak his ankle. I don't know. It was kind of ridiculous. Davis has this really annoying neck that I'd never seen or noticed before, where he just crumples to the ground almost every game, having suffered a career-threatening injury, and then he bounces back 30 seconds later and he scores 20 points in a row. Like, it's ridiculous. You can't take any injury or quote-unquote injury. Like, I don't want to make fun of injuries because, I mean, obviously Miami is struggling now because of their own injury situation. But at the same time, like, Davis just, he sells contact. He flops. He just, I don't know, these injury scares or alleged injury scares are just, they're taking their toll on me. I don't know what to expect anymore, whether it's serious or not. Like, he crumbled to the ground in game five and he looked like he was going to be out with a season ending injury or perhaps a career threatening one, like an Achilles or something like that. And then he just kind of walked it off and he went out there and had a dominant performance. Now, he did limp later on in the game, so it might be a little bit more serious than we had actually anticipated or seen. I don't know. It's hard to tell with him. He might just have a very low threshold for pain. I saw somebody mention that to me on Twitter. It's very likely. At least it kind of seems that way, because if you're able to play through it and still dominate and leap and block shots and do all the things that he does because of his incredible size and athletic ability, then how injured are you really? I mean, as Jimmy has been fond of saying, look, everybody's beat up at this point in the season. Everybody's beat up in the bubble. You kind of find a way to play through it. And I don't know what Davis's situation is. Maybe he'll sit out game six. That would be great. That would certainly help Miami's chances of extending the series even further. But we'll see what happens. Of course, I'll be recapping game six and game seven, perhaps, of the finals. So make sure you check those out. And what better way to do that by subscribing and following this podcast to get the latest episodes as soon as they're out. I'm David Ramil signing off and thanking you, as always, for your support.